Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast. And back with me is Cooper Klein, a contributor to the Rockets Chop Shop YouTube channel and the Upside Swings NBA Draft podcast. Is that returning from hiatus soon, Cooper?
Yes, finally. It'll either be the beginning of next week or somewhere in the middle of next week. We're going to have our first podcast of the cycle, hopping into some of the overseas players in this draft. Those are the most, you know, popularly mocked in the top three, four, five. If you're finally ready for some deep breakdowns, you know, even though the Rockets season has been a lot more interesting, you know, to end it than the last few seasons have been, you know, if you're starting to fiend a little bit for the draft, you know where to come. Come to Upside Swings. Our website will be up and running again here soon. And our latest pod will be out sometime next week.
I'm going to have a draft question for you later. That's a little bit of a tease, but as always, good to see it. I can't believe the Rockets are suddenly fighting for the play-in. But Cooper, the story in March continues to be Jalen Green, who's a 50-40-80 guy in March, 50% from the field, 40 from three, 80 from the line, 26.6 points per game. We saw a spike in Jalen's play the last 2 years post-All-Star break. But Cooper, do you think this is different?
I was talking to somebody about this earlier this week. It is impossible to evaluate Jalen Green fully holistically, right? Like, the stats have really improved. His process looks like it's improved, but he's been playing the worst teams in the league over the last, you know, last few games. It's really, really hard to like fight the instinct to just go, oh, he's so back. Like, you see it. You see why he was drafted number two overall. You see why we've committed all this time to him. I do feel like this is different than the last few years, because a lot of it is he's doing this while still defending at a decent level, while rebounding and hustling at a decent level. But it's hard to like look at it and not just go, well, this is exactly what has happened the last 2 years. So I'm just going to remain in the middle on Jalen Green. I'm going to, you know, withdraw. I'm not going to have any crazy opinions, because I just don't think it's fair to evaluate anything. If he can do like 80% of this coming into October next year, I'm all in. Like 100%, I will go all in. But I'm going to enjoy the run while it lasts. I'm going to enjoy him dominating in March. I thoroughly enjoyed him cooking the Wizards, but it's really, really hard to like look at this is the third time it's been done and go, oh yeah, this is like the leap we need, because it's basically scheduled.
Yeah. Yeah. And when Frank was on last week, it's funny, because I asked him if having the baby is going to change Jalen on the court, you know, and we were half joking, but Jalen admitted it's no joke in the post game with Vanessa. Mm-hmm. Cooper, Rockets fans might want to get Andrea's IG comments and send her some thank yous.
Yeah, send her some apologies for how mean and they thank were yous. To her.
Yeah.
The apologies, thank yous, just the whole thank her for doing God's work and getting our getting our highest draft pick back on track.
Absolutely. And for fans of our content, we're going to talk about some other stuff, but look for our new Houston Sports Talk YouTube shorts if you need a quick adrenaline hit at the office or when you're stuck in traffic. We love your feedback, so get in a comment. Support us by subscribing on YouTube if you haven't already. And Coop, let's go big picture, Rockets, on what's happening right now. And without a focus on a particular player, what stuck out to you about the team and their style of play since the All-Star break?
It seems like everybody is not playing more free, because that kind of implies that everyone was super constricted. But it seems like everybody is just more focused on making the right play instead of like running plays and running these set situations. One isn't necessarily better than the other, like a Şengün post-up or a, you know, all these different high pick and roll DHO stuff, but like the quickness with which everyone is making decisions, the ball stays popping a lot more. There's a lot more free flow, which I think really works for Jalen and Amen in particular. Defensively, they're a lot more switch heavy. They're a lot more focused on just do not like let guys create straight advantages in the pick and roll, which you can do because everyone on this team is, other than Fred, is like 6'5 plus. And it's been really, really fun to watch, you know, all these lake size switches. This really athletic team is finally able to, you know, fully commit to not like a simplified scheme, because they're still playing a lot of help defense, but you can tell that their pick and roll defensive coverages are a lot simpler, just like pure switching and then dropping from the corners. And Jalen's looked so much more engaged in this scheme. Like, he was definitely engaged to start the year, but like everybody is fighting for every ball. It just feels like everybody is playing looser and faster, and you see that fail. You know, there's a lot of careless passes. There's a lot of poor ball handling, but the freedom, it feels like it makes everyone a better shooter because they're playing more careless, more free.
You know, faster too. I mean, faster is a big part of it. And, you know, one thing's that, I mean, this is not sexy for a lot of basketball fans, but you notice it as a junkie. The Rockets are doing so much better at getting their hands on basketballs, you know, help defense, you know, not just the getting the help on the basketball, but being able to recover. But I mean, just the beginning of it, the start of it is where you really go, okay, that's different. And you watch the bad teams, you know, AKA the Wizards, and you just don't see that type of stuff, what they're doing.
You're getting to see a lot more of the activity that was a lot more constrained to just Tari and Dylan to start the year. But it feels like everybody on the floor is now more empowered to defensively playmake and create transition opportunities and get their hands in there. And we have a lot of length and, you know, great hand-eye coordination, you know, a lot of micro skills, athletic type guys on this team. And it feels like we've finally seen the elite athleticism. Like this team is arguably the most athletic team in NBA history. And we've finally seen that unleashed to some degree. And it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I want to get to more Amen Thompson in a bit, but I did hear a lot in spaces at one point. Well, the Rockets are playing faster and Udoka has taken the gas and just gone full bore with this. And he should have done that earlier in the year. He should have had these guys playing faster. Well, a couple of things. To play faster, it helps if you get the rebound. It helps if you get steals. It helps if you have Amen Thompson playing defense. It helps if you have Amen pushing the ball. All of those things make a big difference in playing faster. But, you know, this team, it was always going to be difficult for them to play fast because Fred VanVleet runs. He just doesn't run fast. You know, Şengün runs. And it looks like at times that he's got like a huge backpack on his back with a bunch of bricks in it. Sometimes when he's running down the court, Dylan Brooks is not a guy that can run. But, you know, before Cam got hurt, when you had Amen and Cam out there, it was much easier to pick up the pace. We forget the first couple of months, Amen didn't play. Cam was in the G League a lot of that time. And when he was back, he wasn't playing. So those guys have been super key. That's how you get to run more, is you do better on defense, you get more rebounds, and you also have guys that can actually go fast and run fast. And I think that's been a big part of it.
Yeah, big thing is the rebounding. It feels like the team rebounding is a lot more of a focus point. Like, obviously, when Şengün's out there, he's going to gobble up boards in tight. But it feels like guys like Jalen, you know, all the wings, the forwards, Amen, everyone is doing more boxing out. They're doing more flying in from the wings. Just a lot of varied rebounding. And it feels like it's more of a central team focus for everybody to be involved with the rebounding, because you've lost, you know, your two best rebounders to injury. So you have to work on it as a team. And I think it's been really good for everybody. And everybody looks better and more involved when they're, you know, consistently fighting for every single rebound.
Now, I guess you could say Amen Thompson has been the de facto starting center since Şengün's injury. It's only a 4-game sample with 3 against the Wizards and Spurs. So take it with what you will there. But the Rockets' offensive rating with Amen on the floor, Cooper, is 130.3. And the defensive rating is 101.3. I was thinking about this. What position does Amen play next year? Has this stretch changed your thinking next year or into the future as to where he actually plays on a basketball court? Like, what position?
Like, if I were to answer your question, I would just answer it with all of them. Like, it's obviously not an answer because, you know, you want me to pick one of the 5, but this is part of the beauty of drafting Amen, right? Is you pick this guy who comes in and is immediately, you know, Bruce Brown with super soldier serum. And, you know, it's also sometimes able to handle the ball, get downhill, is developing more of the point guardy parts of his game. But he has such a high floor because of the athleticism, the defense, the playmaking. It's really good to just get him on the floor right now and get him reps, you know, where he can just go downhill and make reads and do stuff. Because every time he touches the ball, good things happen. And if you can find ways to force feed him the ball without making him create from a standstill, which is his biggest weakness right now, I would say even bigger than the shooting, because it's more important to his game and his long-term development that he is able to, you know, accelerate with the ball in his hands and not just catch on the roll or come off a screen. It's just so much more important that you can get him on the floor and figure out how to extract value from his current skill set while minimizing what he doesn't do. And this perfectly does that. I mean, it's what happened with Ozar in Detroit before his, you know, his injury and the blood clot stuff. Hope he's okay. But I think he ends up being like a point guard who is like technically the 3. Like, he is like your secondary playmaker because he doesn't technically bring the ball up, but you find a way for him to make as many of your reads as possible. He slots in at every single position on defense, just covers so many holes. And the beauty of Amen Thompson is he can play 1 through 5. He can come in and be your backup point guard. You probably don't want him right now to be your starting point guard, and that's fine. So he's your starting power forward or your starting center. and you still get the same amount of value. This was why I was so high on him coming into last year's draft, why I'm so happy we drafted him. Just versatility like this and such strong strengths mean he can play any position. And I think he'll basically be our four next year, right? He'll play the four with Sengun back, be more of a cutter, and hopefully that'll be what he's able to do until the handle progresses a little more and he can do more initiation.
I believe you had him number two coming out of the draft last year. Has anybody changed your mind since then?
No. Obviously, Wembanyama's still insane. Any other year, he would have been one for me. I mean, people talk about Brandon Miller. They played head-to-head, and Amon actually, like, destroyed him. He, like, humiliated Miller in that game. It was, like, not even close who looked like the better player. You know, Scoot hasn't looked great. I don't know who else would come close from last year's draft class. I had Amon. We did it was, like, players under 23 who you would want to have, and I think I had Amon at three on that list for players under 23. At the time, I had Zion above him, and I think I would have Amon above him now. Zion's still great, obviously, still very good. I just don't think he's going to ever get back to that level. I think the top tier of really, truly young players is Wemby and Amon, and we're just going to see as he continues to grow and get better just how much he can do for this team and you know how much value he can add from every single spot on the floor moving forward.
Yeah, if anybody missed it, you mentioned Assur is out for the year with a blood clot. I don't know how much of him that you've been able to watch with the Pistons, but for those who haven't watched a lot of Assur, tell people, you know, they're identical twins. What's the difference between the two of them? What makes Amon that much better than his brother right now?
And so a lot of it is position, right? And I think Amon's more versatile because he's more athletic and a quicker processor. Now, both of those are marginal, right? Like, he's not substantially better than Azar, but he is noticeably a better athlete, a better processor, and a better decision maker on every part of the floor. When you're playing with such small margins, because these guys can't shoot, their handle's kind of loose, like you're playing at the margins of being elite versus being Ben Simmons, those, you know, small athletic and, you know, mental gaps really start to show. People really liked Azar because the jumper was supposedly better. It looked slightly better coming out, but
the numbers aren't there, are they?
No, they never have been. That's kind of the issue. At one point through the OTE season, Azar was shooting 40% from three. This was like 3 weeks into the season, and Amon was at like 25. And eventually it evens out, and Azar was at like 30, and Amon was at like 28. The numbers, specific numbers, are probably off, but that just to show the trend. They're both awful shooters. Whatever tiny gap exists between them was not enough for people to, you know, have Azar as like this extremely better prospect. I think the shot for them is kind of a red herring, kind of to distract you from what they really do and really don't do. I think Azar, if he can get healthy, you know, really come into next season as the Pistons starting power forward with shooters at the 1, 2, and 3 and a guy like Durin, who can also be, you know, a vertical floor spacer, shown flashes of being a, you know, a real, like a floor spacer out to the long mid range in three. I think that'll be a great fit. As long as he's forced to play next to so many non-shooters though, I really worry about him there. It's just tough. I hope he gets a full offseason to really work on the way he fits with the rest of that Detroit core. Cause guys like him and Sasser and Cade, like that is a beautiful synergy that you could have, but there's too many Wisemans and, you know, Kevin Knox for a time and all these guys that they just want to shove in there. But I hope he succeeds. I really hope he's able to find success there. And he should, because he has a lot of the same strengths as Amon. He's just in such a poor fit and context that it really only shows off how bad of a shooter he is, it feels like, instead of being able to show, oh, look, I'm, you know, I can play as a center right now because they have six other centers that need minutes. You know, it's a lot of marginal stuff, but I think Amon is definitely a better player than Azar.
Yeah, the irony is a lot of people here in Houston have griped about how bad the shooting is for the Rockets, but the Pistons, it's a hell of a lot worse, at least from the starters. They, of course, they added a couple of guys at the deadline that might be able to help them out. But I want to unleash Coach Cooper Klein. But before I do, quick reminder for Texans and Astros fans, my old co-host, Sports Radio 610, Sean Bajani, stopped by to talk Texans on Tuesday show. And my co-host, Steven, and I did a quickie show on the Astros early Wednesday. So go check those out. But Cooper, it's time to get out your clipboard, man. If I made you the Rockets coach next year and there wasn't a big splash addition to this group, who's your starting five? Is it different from Udoka's main five this year?
It's kind of hard. So there's six guys who I think like almost have to be in the starting five because they're the six best players. And it's kind of hard to pick who goes instead of the other, but I would end up going Fred VanVleet at the one. I kind of want to get funky here, but I'm going to be nice just because he's been good recently. I'll go Jalen at the two, Tari Eason at the three, Amen at the four, Şengün at the five, and then move Jabari into a sixth man role. Or if Jalen is back to his normal self, then shift everybody up and run Fred, Amen, Tari, Bari, Şengün. So basically just whoever's playing better between Jalen and Jabari, swap them in that lineup. I think you get the maximum defensive versatility of running Amen and Tari together. And then you still have a good point of attack defender in Fred. You have Dylan coming off the bench to be more of a spark plug, which I think fits him better than getting three fouls in 4 minutes every single game as a starter. And then you have a bunch of guys. You have the three best rebounders on your team and three guys who are like basically top 15 rebounders in the NBA in Şengün, Tari, and Amen, all in one lineup. You're going to destroy teams on both ends on the boards, be able to space. Everyone can cut. You run more of a motion-y offense. There's a lot of screens and back cuts and short roll stuff. And you let Fred play into his advantage of just making quick dump off passes and taking threes. You let Şengün operate in the short roll some more. You spent some time with him this offseason working on his, you know, his quickness as a processor. I think he's a great processor, but his one weakness is he takes more time than a lot of guys on the team to really process the floor. So you get him working on his little Jairus Walker type passes in the paint. You have Amen in dunker spot, screening, cutting, all that stuff. And Tari spacing out to three, cutting, screening, potentially Jabari if Jalen's not playing up to par. But I think just maximum size, maximum intelligence, maximum, you know, athleticism and length on both ends. I'm just really excited to see Tari back with the group. If I think that's kind of the big point I'm kind of leading up to with this is seeing Tari back with this team that has so much more cohesiveness as a real unit again. And then you throw the best offensive rebounder, you know, one of the best cutters and defenders in the world into that. It's like you're basically adding some sub all-star level play to a team that's been pretty good, you know, for what they are. Yeah, final group, Fred, Jalen, Tari, Amen, Şengün. There's my five.
You know, if you left the five guys as they are right now, the five starters that he's had most of the year, I wouldn't do it because I'm with you. I mean, well, first of all, Amen and Tari are two of your best five players. So you kind of want those guys on the floor. I mean, I feel like they're definitely two of the best five Rockets players. But if you brought Amen and Tari and Cam off the bench, I mean, that just sounds like the biggest jailbreak of all time. It would be must watch. You know, they had the Goon Squad, you know, last year or the year before that or whatever. Call it the Goon Squad. Man, this is like Goon Squad times 10 with those guys coming off with just the havoc that they caused, the steals. You know, Cam underrated as far as him getting in the lane, getting his paws on some basketballs. But I mean, those three guys coming off the bench would be fun. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm like, yeah, Tari and Amen, it's almost like you got to make room for them. And, you know, I think there's going to be this deal with, if you look at Udoka, he likes the guys that have experience and all of that sort of stuff. But something looks funky with Dylan Brooks. I don't know what it is. I don't know if you've noticed it. I don't know if he's been right since that injury. It seems like some nights he's out there and he looks like a traffic cone and guys are just flying by him. And other nights he looks like the old Dylan Brooks. He looks like the guy. I mean, we forget he just was on an all NBA defense like last year. I mean, this guy was supposedly one of the best defensive players. And there are times out there that he doesn't look like he's got the athleticism anymore or something.
I think it's a lot to do with that injury, but it's really hard to tell. I also think that even when he was like really good to start the year, every single time Tari came in, I thought Tari played better. Like, obviously you want to see your energy, like come off the bench, whatever. And Tari's been doing that since college at this point. But at some point you want to start your five best players. You want to step your best foot forward. And then you still have like Dylan Brooks is still a good player and a good punch of energy off the bench. I think if you move Amen and Tari to the starting lineup, and then you have Dylan, Jabari, and Cam off the bench, it's not as crazy. It's not as like drastic of a switch, but you are still able to run a lot of the same stuff and have success in a lot of the same ways because those guys are still tough. They're still able to, that the bench can really shoot the ball and you can swap some of them in as need be. If Tari's not really shooting the ball well, or, you know, Amen's really getting sagged off of, you can find ways to adjust with these shooters. But I mean, every time Tari played, the team just looked like it made more sense. Every time Amen's on the floor, I mean, we've had a plus 29 net rating with him the past four games. Just find a way to get your best players on the floor, even if it screws up the politics of the team or you know, I think that's kind of been the downfall of the teams the last few years. It's like, oh, well, Jalen has to play 30 minutes, even when he's stinking, and Jabari has to start because he's your third overall pick. And it's like, Amon's your fourth overall pick, and Tari is your second best player. Just play them. Like, just get over yourself and play them.
Yeah, and it's not a fun thing to talk about, but it's a very real thing to talk about. If you had Tari and Amon out there with Şengün, he's a decent rebounder. But he's not, you know, the numbers say, oh, you know, close to double digits, but he's not really a great rebounder. And then you put him with two guys out there in Amon and Tari, and it's like, you know, I dare the other team to get rebounds with those two guys out there. And you're going to get second, third chances, fourth chances, 16th chances with those two guys that, you know, you haven't been able to do this year as much. So, yeah, no, I would love to see those two guys starting. That's for sure. And I love Jabari, too. And don't put it past him to make a third year leap. So, you know, I'm interested to see what he adds this offseason, because he added stuff last year and he might add some more stuff. And like, it's a nice problem to have, though. It's a nice problem that some of these other young teams just don't have right now, Cooper.
No, it's I could look like an idiot in like 5 months, you know, come October, when, you know, Jabari is suddenly a free throw drawing machine like we saw last summer league. You know, he's really rebounding the ball at a new level, and he's added some post passing, and you know, we could see any number of these guys have a leap. We are so lucky to have a young core that's actually good and talented, unlike, you know, 3 years ago when the young core was KJ Martin, Jalen, and Gup and Usman Garuba.
And also, I think it would help Jabari a little bit coming off the bench to be able to work on his scoring, because he would have more opportunities without playing with Şengün as much.
I talked about that to start the season. Was Jabari, when he was playing really bad to start the season, like in preseason and the first few games before he, like, the shot started going in and he looked more comfortable, Jabari's a guy who's used to getting shots and, like, creating shots and doing all this stuff. He would probably look more comfortable as the sixth man, getting, like, designated looks in a slower offense, and he's adjusted to the faster, like, pace of play better than, you know, you expect a lot of guys to. But you want a guy to be comfortable. If Jabari can come in as the sixth man, get some mid-post ISOs, you know, run some DHOs, work on his game more, and then at the end of the first or the beginning of the second, then fade more into his, you know, spot-up shooting role, cutting role, screening role. Let him do both, because you don't draft a guy third to just not see what he has in his bag. And Jabari has some bag. He has some game. Like, we've seen it. But you have to be intentional in setting him up to get there. And I would like to see that, and I don't think he's going to get the opportunity while he's starting.
Last thing I wanted to ask you, since you follow the draft so closely, let me get your take on the Brooklyn pick, if the Rockets keep it, which I tend to doubt, but let's pretend they do. That pick's number 8 right now. Tankathon has G League forward Modest Bozelas going to the Rockets. Who's your ideal fit for what this team needs? And maybe give me a couple options.
Ideal, like number one ideal, is Kentucky's Reed Shepherd. 6'3", best shooter in the draft, one of the best shooters of the last few years. You could build an entire offense around him, Şengün, and Amon, all three being just perfect gravity wells. Like, you run some nice screen actions and Reed draws two to the ball and makes an easy, you know, dish out, you know, have him off some motion. He's not the best self creator, but we're like the one team in the lottery who doesn't need self creation or elite point of attack defense. He's a good event creator off the ball, but a great off ball player on offense. You know, I think he still shooting 50% from three? I should know that off the top of my head. He's shooting 52.5% from three on the season, on an absurd amount of difficulty and a crazy amount of attempts.
I saw that projected now. He's like fourth in the draft.
I think NBA teams are lower on him than a lot of analysts are because of lot of different biases. He's like 6'2", and he looks really bad at the point of attack. So he kind of has the AJ Griffin issue, where AJ was like probably a top 10 to 12 player, slips to 16 because, oh, his defense looks so bad at the point of attack, but he actually does quite a bit on the defensive end. He has really high steal and block rates.
But talk about Kyle Lowry type strength with him. Is that fair? Is that a little overboard?
He is strong, but like Lowry, I mean, Lowry's an outlier strength guy. Reed is really strong. He also just doesn't know how to use it yet. So I think that'll come with time and as he works on his craft. But I would draft him here as just an off-ball wing who can shoot the leather off the ball, you know, get into passing lanes, add to that defensive culture, you know, just really be a perfect fit with the guys we already have. I do also like Bozelas, who they have us taking at 8, you know, just massive. Another guy who can really shoot, was mocked really high to start the year as a creator, but I don't think you draft him to be a creator. he can take guys off the dribble, off the ball, and he has some sick posters, very athletic. But you bring him in as like a true weak side rim protector next to Şengün, who can also really shoot the ball. So Jabari, great defender, great ISO defender. He's almost more of a three defensively than a four or a five. He's like a switch five who can guard, you know, everyone out on the floor, but he's not great at covering a ton of ground in help. That's exactly where Mattis thrives. You know, he can really cover ground, decent rebounder. You know, not everything he was cracked up to be to start the year, but that's not what you bring him in to do. This year, you're not drafting somebody to be your 1A star. You know, you need somebody who can fit next to our guys and just shoot the ball, play some good defense, and play a role. And I think both Mattis and Reed can really, really do that.
A guy moving up some boards and another shooter is Connect. How do you feel about Dalton Connect out of Tennessee?
He's nice. I really like the shot. And if those two guys are gone, I mean, why not? If you're like, if you know what you need, then just go get the guy who can do it. Even if I'm not usually a guy who is like really into drafting a guy for just shooting, I think Connect or whatever, he can really shoot. He can really dribble. And he can really pass in like an NBA forward way, right? He can make connective passes and pass out of drives. He's a weird defensive fit, but if you're just going to draft him to come off the bench and win you some games because of how good of a shooter he is, I would be fine with taking him as high as eight. It wouldn't be the most inspired pick, but there's something to be said for just getting the guy who you know is going to fit. The other shooter who is mocked this high is Jacoby Walter out of Baylor. I watched him live. I went to that Baylor UH game. Holy cow. He is an insane shooter for a freshman. He doesn't do a ton else right now, but he's legit 6'5". You know, he's got some muscle, got some length. He hit this like insane full sprint motion shot off a pin down and like nothing but net. It was the cleanest shot I've ever seen a freshman hit. And I was immediately like, I need this guy on my Rockets. He can do a little bit of self-creation, but he's just super athletic. And I think he'd fit next to the guys we have. I don't know what else he brings right now. I haven't deep dived his game as much as I should.
Is he like a Jordan Hawkins with the Pelicans? Is that similar game?
Yeah, but he's definitely more athletic. Hawkins was like ridiculously skinny and still is. Hawkins can be abused defensively and can't get to the rim at all and can't pass and doesn't have much self-creation, but he's the best movement shooter of the past, you know, 4 or 5 years in any draft. Jacoby is just like, there's some real hope on that shot versatility. He's been really streaky. And he's probably my least favorite out of the four that we've talked about. But if he falls, I would like to trade in, take the swing on a guy who's just shown shooting talent and see what you can get out of him. Send him to the G, see if you can turn him into this, you know, super duper sniper, you know, that we don't really have.
Anything else you want to touch on with the Rockets or anything you want to plug before we take off?
Ooh, so I just got back. I was off Twitter for a little bit, but I don't really have anything to plug at the moment. Just like stay on the lookout for upside swing stuff. Go Cougs. We play Friday and I am dying, but I'm so anxious about the Cougs playing, but I think they're going to be fine. I do think Jamal Shedd is a draftable player, and that's not just my fandom speaking. I think he's exactly what the NBA is kind of like not realizing that it's missing. There's probably 10 teams in the league that could have Jamal Shedd just come off their bench and be like, probably their seventh or eighth man right now and play good ball and just be smart and make the correct reads and NBA spacing. He's basically if Tyus Jones wasn't the worst defensive player in the league. That's a great player, and NBA teams just don't appreciate that. That's basically all I got. Go Cougs.
For the Cougs fans, by the way, for the Cougs fans, we are going to do a live Cougar postgame Sunday, assuming that they can take care of business against Longwood. I'm guessing, you know, that's not going to be a big one that you guys are going to want to have a post game on the Longwood game, but you know, we're going to take care of the post game. So another reason to make sure you're on notifications on our channel. So you can be ready as soon as we pump that out. But after the Cougs game, just flip it over to our channel and we're going to have a live post game for the Cougars. And I can't wait for them in the tournament. I'm so super excited. Hopefully everybody is about as healthy as they can be going into this because that's, to me, that's the biggest deal. Otherwise that there's no question that this team could make a championship run. But man, it's always good talking with you, and we'll talk again soon for sure. Thanks a bunch.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.